Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. A sensible choice. Whereas the practice of witchcraft, sorcery, or black magic of any kind is an affront to the eternal fire, the king, and his subjects. And whereas those that willfully practice such magic are flagrantly disregarding the laws of nature and men. And whereas magic has been known to cease life, alter minds, maim limbs, commune with creatures from the void, and cause wanton destruction of lands. Be it resolved that any witch, warlock, sorcerer, druid, or sorceress found practicing magic of any kind will be summarily tried and speedily executed. Proclamation of King Radovid V of Redania, dated 21 October 1271. Visceral, the application of choosing yourself, your own existence. Your wedges of courage are just in grasp. Find and take that which you need, the Gutter King said. Temerian Folk Ballad. 1. You kidnapped a man, Zevo growled.
We didn't, Jeremiah said. The Gutter Rebellion kidnapped him. We're tasked with transporting him to Redania.
You kidnapped him, the Witcher repeated, and now you want us to help you haul a man against his will across the Pontar River.
Ethramel craned his neck to look towards the campfire in the distance, and the sullen man with bound hands sitting at it. Silva sat nearby, legs pulled up tight against her chest, tasked with keeping watch.
What's his name?
I don't know, Jeremiah said.
Where's he from? Zevo asked.
The craftsman looked to Yana for support, and found none.
Why does the Gutter Rebellion want him? Ethramel said.
I'm not happy with it either. But we'll find out more when we deliver him to the rebels in Redania,
Jeremiah said softly, as if the kidnapped man could hear them. They stood in a small circle on the darkened Temerian plains. Zevo, Ethramel, Jeremiah, and Yana. A lander stood as a fiery obelisk, too close for anyone's comfort.
And he's to go along willingly, I suppose, the sorcerer pressed.
Do you plan on drugging him with magic, Yana? Or is that your apprentice's job? Do you expect the Witcher to dope him with his signs every few hours? No. If not, then we'll be dragging him kicking and screaming for the next 3 days. I can't think of a better way to draw unwanted attention.
If it comes to it, and anyone asks, Yana said, we'll say we're bringing him to Redania for the price on his head. You should know what it's like to have a bounty on you, Ethramel. The elf's nostrils flared.
And I know what it's like having someone trailing you for days at a time. I'm not keen to repeat that. I'm with the Witcher on this one. We're not taking the man with us.
I didn't realize it was up for debate, Jeremiah said.
It is, Zevo snarled. You just expect us to do the Gutter Rebellion's dirty work for you?
I expect you to do what you're told, actually, Jeremiah said, provided you're paid to do it. What else are Witchers good for?
Zevo stepped towards Jeremiah, wincing at the weight put on his sprained leg. The craftsman held his ground, fists clenched, but Yana stepped between them. The Witcher narrowed his yellow eye and said,
You're treading a fine line, Jeremiah. I could take everything you have on you right now for leaving us to die in a lander, and you'd still be in my debt.
You've got quite a pair on you demanding anything from us at all, the way you conducted yourself, Ethramel said to Jeremiah.
Shut it, Zevo said to the sorcerer. You're the reason we snuck into that damned city in the first place. Was it worth it, Ethramel? You didn't end the siege. You sped it up, and got your Nilfgaardian friend injured in the bargain, while your drug-dealing companion was left to rot in a sewer. Ethramel's mottled and swollen jaw locked, and his eyes hardened. He spoke slowly and deliberately. My friends wouldn't have been put in that situation, you plowing son of a whore, if you'd had even a second's forethought and told me Theo was a sorcerer working with the wild fucking hunt. This is getting us nowhere, Yana said. If you would all stop bickering for... Why are you calling any shots? I don't recall you being a part of this group, Zevo said sharply. He jabbed his left forefinger at Silva and said, You or your apprentice. She's quite a trade down from the doctor, if you ask me. I'm not a part of your fucking group, Silva shouted from the campfire. I wouldn't join you if you paid me. You're a bunch of dysfunctional brigands that don't deserve Yana's attention. She looked to Yana. Why are you wasting your breath with them? They don't deserve it. Bold words for an apprentice barely old enough to form cohesive thoughts, Ethramel said. Why Yana's wasting her time with you, I don't know. The Witcher crossed his arms and repeated, I'm not carting a kidnapped man against his. Zevo's voice caught in his throat, as if taking a deep breath of frigid air. He opened his cracked jaw and found it hard to breathe. Jeremiah coughed and reached for his own neck. Ethramel's knees buckled, and he held his arm out towards nothing in a vain attempt to steady himself. Only Yana appeared unfazed. Even Jeremiah's mundane senses could feel the power emanating from the sorceress. Her face became a collection of hard lines, and she spoke in an amplified, commanding tone. Can none of you see beyond your own petty squabbles? Are you incapable of seeing the forest from the trees? You nurse these grudges like they mean something, while the North is on the brink of collapse. This Gutter King is organized and thorough. He has agents in every corner of the North, and he's planning something big. Thousands will die if the Gutter Rebellion goes to war to forge a kingdom in the Pontar Valley. No one is paying it any mind, so this burden falls to me. Do you understand that? You act as if one man's plight outweighs all of this, outweighs preventing Ithlin's prophecy from coming to pass. It doesn't, so we're taking this prisoner to the rebels on the Pontar River to gain their trust and learn more about the Gutter King. I have promised to pay you for your efforts, and I expect you all to follow through with your commitment. But this is not a democracy. Do I make myself clear? Jeremiah opened his mouth, but only a thin strand of saliva came out. Zevo grunted with effort, and Ethramel puffed his chest out, trying to take a deep breath. Ah, right, Yana said. Forgive me, I forgot. The sorceress's power dissipated instantly, and the Witcher, the craftsman, and the sorcerer took heaving breaths. Jeremiah wiped his mouth with his forearm and nodded. Ethramel waved his hand in a dismissive gesture. Yana trained her gaze on Zevo. Have you something to say, Witcher? Zevo hawked and spat a gob of phlegm. Nothing at all. The sorceress looked at the three, smiled, and said, Good. I'm glad we've got that all settled. 2. Silva, are you awake? Silva stirred near the dying campfire. An uneasy sleep had come over her for a blissful hour or two. She looked to the sullen prisoner, who lied prone with his back to her. The man looked plain, and he did not have a name. In fact, he had not said a single word. Not now. I'm trying to sleep, Silva thought. She rolled closer to the fire and gripped the handle of her scratched mirror. Can't we talk? The voice in her head said. As usual, she did not see the speaker. I'm too tired to talk right now, Silva thought. Try again later. She felt the voice pass from her head like a cool breeze. 3. Ethramel slept poorly that first night. He did not dream, thankfully, but he woke at seemingly every sound around him. And when he woke, he thought of his old friend Havert, of Tobias and his lost business opportunity, of his son Colden Op Teld. Then sleep blessedly came, only to be interrupted after what seemed a moment. It was during one of these awakenings that Ethramel saw Zevo stand up and run off into the night. Ethramel propped himself up on his elbows and looked around the camp. Yana and Jeremiah and Silva were fast asleep, but their prisoner was gone. Ethramel understood at once and said, "Shit." He hopped to his feet and bit his tongue to avoid yowling. The pain he put on his sprained ankle was intense, but it faded quickly. Ethramel took off after Zevo. The dark pressed in around him, and he nearly stumbled into the Witcher, hunkered down by a tree. Ethramel caught his breath.
"Jeremiah and Yana's prisoner ran for it, eh?"
Zevo held up the length of rope that bounded the man's wrists. "Seems that way." The sorcerer ran a hand through his dirty hair and cursed. For a moment, he debated letting the man disappear. Then he remembered how his throat closed up from Yana's magic, and judged that to be a foolish choice.
"I suppose we should retrieve him."
"I suppose we should. Fortunately, he's not adept at covering his tracks." Zevo tapped at the broken twig near the bottom of the tree before standing with a grunt. He rubbed his aching leg. "Follow me." They didn't have to travel very far, though their accumulated wounds slowed them significantly. Ethramel's eyes adjusted to the dark, and he saw a humanoid outline half walking, half jogging in the distance. Ethramel stopped, turned to Zevo, and grinned.
"Watch this."
The sorcerer created a circular portal. He was, Ethramel thought as he stepped through it, becoming quite good at the spell. He felt the familiar whoosh, and suddenly he was 5 feet in front of the prisoner, directly facing him. The man was busy looking over his shoulder at the towering Witcher in the distance, so he did not see Ethramel's outstretched arm until he collided with it. The man lost his balance and landed on his back. The sorcerer drew his sword in a flash and held it at the man's bobbing throat.
"That's better, no?" he said to the prisoner. "Please don't make me do that again."
The man glared at Ethramel until Zevo caught up and rolled the man onto his stomach. The Witcher produced a length of rope and started tying the man's arms behind his back.
"Impressive," he said to the sorcerer,
holding the half-finished knot in one hand and rubbing his sprained ankle with the other. "Wish you could have teleported us out of Valandar. Would have saved us a lot of trouble." Ethramel sighed.
"Do you and I need to have a talk, Zevo?"
"I don't know." Zevo tied off the knot with a violent jerk of his arm. The prisoner winced.
"Do we?"
"Very well, if you insist. I accept your apology." The Witcher glared up at Ethramel. His cat-like pupil was so dilated it nearly muscled out the yellow iris. "I was expecting an apology from you."
"Oh, for what?" Ethramel snapped. "You chose to sneak into Orlando with me because the craftsman paid you. I didn't twist your damned arm, so what do I have to apologize for?"
"For putting all our lives at risk so you can make some money selling fist tech. For thinking you knew more than everyone because you're a sorcerer. For being so damned incompetent at statecraft, you nearly got us all killed in a sewer." Ethramel barked laughter.
"And you've nothing to do with that last bit. You could have told me about Theo any time in those fucking sewers, and you chose not to. Why? Because you have an irrational distrust of sorcerers? Because you think you're better than me? Grow the fuck up, Zevo. Things have changed since you started witchering, and your inability to adapt will get us all killed."
Zevo stood, his head blocking the moon and shadowing Ethramel's face. The sorcerer didn't feel the least bit intimidated. He was too damned mad to feel anything even close to fear.
"I am better than you, Elf. Don't ever doubt that. I don't only think of myself. Selfishness, it seems, is common in all sorcerers."
"You both speak pretty highly of yourselves,"
the prisoner said with his face in the dirt. These were the first words he had shared with them.
"But neither of you is above kidnapping."
"Shut the fuck up,"
Ethramel and Zevo shouted at the same time, before looking back at each other with unchecked rage. Later, Ethramel would realize he acted on pure instinct in that moment. He could justify his anger afterwards, telling himself that the Witcher had never trusted him and would never see him as an equal. But in that moment, Ethramel didn't think of anything. He was done thinking. Ethramel punched Zevo. The blow landed on the side of Zevo's bruised jaw. The Witcher's eye widened as his head snapped back. He stumbled into the dirt, his diminished left hand holding the side of his face. Ethramel rushed forward and tackled Zevo. The Witcher had over 100 pounds on Ethramel and stood nearly a head taller, but Zevo was caught flat-footed, and all that extra weight just meant he hit the ground harder. Ethramel felt his teeth vibrate as he fell with Zevo and landed on the Witcher's oiled armor. He scrambled to sit up and get another blow on Zevo before Zevo punched Ethramel's stomach. The wind rushed out of Ethramel, and he saw, with perfect clarity, a string of spit splatter against Zevo's cheek. Ethramel gripped his stomach, and Zevo grabbed hold of his shoulders, wrenching Ethramel into the dirt. Zevo's weight bared down on him as he planted his knees on Ethramel's arms and cocked his fist high enough to cast a moon shadow over the elf's face. With his hands bound, Ethramel's options were severely limited. He muttered a sloppy incantation and felt fire well up in his throat. Ethramel puffed out his cheeks and blew a small gout of flame at Zevo's head. The fire dissipated before it reached the Witcher's face, but it was enough to stay his fist as he swiped at the flames and rocked slightly backwards on his knees, releasing his hold on the sorcerer. Ethramel scrambled back and jumped to his feet, wincing as his sprained ankle buckled beneath the strain. Zevo stood up with effort and rubbed his jaw. The two locked eyes again, and Ethramel prepared a spell in his mind.
"What in the fuck are you doing?"
Jeremiah stumbled between the two of them, his white cotton nightshirt undone at the neck to reveal a tangle of coarse chest hair. His eyes were half-lidded and red-rimmed, and his hair corkscrewed like a hedgehog.
"You could wake the Nilfgaardians back in Alandir with all the noise you're raising."
"I suppose that wouldn't cause much trouble for you," Ethramel spat without thinking. He winced and rubbed his stomach. "You'd just teleport away and leave the rest of us to fend for ourselves." "You're one to talk," Zevo said. "You've a habit of disappearing yourself, elf."
"Thank you, Zevo," Jeremiah said. "Took the words right out of my..."
"I'm not on your side either, coward," the Witcher replied. Jeremiah's eyes widened, and he took a step forward, crossing his arms.
"All right, I see where this is going. I knew you two were more than capable of taking care of yourselves, and I was right. Yana and Silva and I had..."
He motioned to the bound prisoner.
"Him with us. It was a sensible choice."
The prisoner spat out a clod of dirt and said,
"That's not what I'd call it."
"I'm sure that would have comforted you if we died in the siege," Ethramel said. "Or would you even have spared a single thought for us?"
"I wouldn't bet on it."
"Fuck off. I don't have anything to prove to you."
"No, most Dwan are contemptible pieces of shit. So you're right. You don't have anything to prove to me."
"Always with the strong words," Jeremiah said.
He uncrossed his arms and balled his hands into fists.
"But you didn't seem so tough when..."
A sharp whistle cut through the air like a whip crack. The Witcher, the sorcerer, and the craftsman froze, eyes straining in the darkness. Ethramel made out a shape up ahead in the plains, far out of reach. "All right, friends," the shape said. "I want you to raise your arms. Me and my companions each got an arrow trained on your heart. Nice and slow now." Ethramel looked to Zevo, then at Jeremiah, feeling his cheeks redden. He'd allowed his emotions to get the better of him, allowed his senses to focus only on the people right in front of him. It gave these ambushers ample time to get the drop. Zevo and Jeremiah's expressions told much the same story of shame. The three of them raised their hands, slowly. Ethramel saw two more shapes slink out of the darkness. They inched forward, knocked arrows never dipping.
"You were right about the noise," one of the ambushers, a hulking shadow, said to Jeremiah. "We could hear you all the way from our camp. Just stay where you are and keep your hands up."
"Wait a minute," the first figure said. He was close enough now that Ethramel could make out his features. Curly black hair, knife-like cheekbones, green leather armor. He looked strangely familiar. Then the ambusher said,
"Oh shit, it's the Griffin Slayers!"
Then it all came back, close enough, under the lightning sky that foretold dawn. It was the three hunters from Verdun who also tried to slay the griffin plaguing the town of Bedzin upon Ismena. He, Zevo, and Jeremiah beat them to it. And, surprisingly, the hunters accepted the loss of their bounty graciously.
"Damn, we nearly killed you."
One of the hunters, a woman with curly brown hair and freckles dotting her brown skin,
laughed, and lowered her bow and arrow. Ethramel struggled to remember her name, but then it came back, Acilla of Verdun. The curly-haired hunter was named Devry, and he also lowered his bow. "Aye, we thought you were brigands." He got close enough to pat Zeppo on the shoulder, and, to the witcher's dismay, he did. "What in the hell are you all doing here?"
"What's it matter?" Zeppo said.
The hunter, built like a brick shithouse, named Avin, shrugged. "Not much to us, but I imagine our companion will ask all the same."
"Companion?" Jeremiah said.
He squinted and rubbed his beard.
"Last I remember, you three were traveling with..."
They all heard a ballad being sung in the distance, about love gained neath a griffin's roost, and Ethramel knew exactly who their companion was.
"Spare me," the sorcerer sighed.
4. "My friends, I see our paths have crossed yet again." Arthur of Garamore, a wandering troubadour Zevo, Jeremiah, and Ethramel had met in the town of Undying, and more recently in the Temerian port town of Bedzin upon Ismena, strummed his lute and grinned. They had all gathered near the dying campfire, where Yana and Silva yawned and rubbed their eyes. The stars retreated from the burgeoning light, and the moon lost most of its luster.
"Arthur, we've ran into each other so many times now," Ethramel said. "I'm starting to think you're stalking us."
The troubadour laughed. He wore his colorful pantaloons and was sporting a sandy blonde beard. "I must admit, there was some stalking this time around. Avin here," he pointed to the largest of the hunters, "heard a ruckus and went to investigate. What brings you here? Last I heard, you were taking the Ismena River east."
"We were, but things got complicated," Jeremiah said. "What are you doing this far north?"
Arthur shrugged. "Well, Nilfgaard is just south of us, and the Kingdom of Redania, last bastion of the north, is ahead of us. I'd rather stay on the northern side of the war."
Zevo grunted. "Trying to cross the Pontar, then?"
"Indeed." Arthur cocked his head at the bound man sitting by the ashen remains of the fire. "I don't believe we've been introduced," Silva said quickly, hopping up from her bedroll. "I am Silva of Ardkarag." "Ah, another Kedwenny has joined your Hansa. It seems you've new companions every time we meet." Arthur swept the brown hat off his head, and a tumble of blonde hair fell out. "I am Arthur of Garamore, troubadour by trade, and these three fellows with me are Devry, Acilla, and Avin." Devry rustled his curly hair and smiled sheepishly. "Nice to meet you." "And you've another I haven't met," Arthur said. He held his hat to his chest and looked at Yana. "I don't believe we've had the pleasure." "We've not. I am Yana of Aldersburg." "A beautiful name, worthy of a ballad."
"If you insist."
Arthur coughed and said, "And not to prod a potentially sore subject, but who is the bound man you have in your company?" The sorceress spoke before anyone else could. "A bounty. We're transporting him into Redania. He's a prolific horse thief." Jeremiah looked at Ethramel and Zevo, wondering if they'd blow the cover, but the witcher and the sorcerer looked to be in their own thoughts. Zevo squinted his eye up at the pale pink sky and said,
"I don't imagine we'll get much more sleep. Best to be off."
"Since we're headed the same direction, I take it you're traveling with us?" Ethramel said to the troubadour. It was a question posed as an inevitability.
Arthur blinked. "Well, yes, if you'll have us."
"Hasn't stopped you before."
Zevo walked towards his horse. "Just keep up." They could have taken paved roads north, but Yana decided that the Temerian plains, with its tall grass and occasional cluster of trees, provided better cover. No one questioned her choice. Zevo gently sat the prisoner into Diabol's saddle and walked alongside the horse. The man did not protest, but he continued to glare at everyone who made eye contact. Jeremiah didn't blame him, of course, nor did he hold the attempted escape from last night against the man. Hell, Jeremiah wondered more than once whether he should set the man free. The craftsman had little interest in turning him over to the Gutter Rebellion. But Yana did, and what could be done about that? Yana rode beside Jeremiah. Shortly after teleporting out of Valander, she created another portal, stepped through, and returned with a chestnut mare named Ash. Yana had also changed out of her green dress into a sensible green tunic with brown pants and boots. She hid her hair in a knit skullcap, and looked more akin to a logger than a sorceress. she shared her horse with Silva, and they passed the time whispering to each other. Jeremiah decided now, as they ambled along the plains in the early morning light, was as good a time as any to ask. He whispered to Yana and her apprentice,
"This business doesn't sit right with me. Do we have to give the man away?"
"I'm as conflicted as you are," Yana said, chewing her lower lip. "But if we let him go, we'll lose our only lead on the Gutter King."
"With all due respect, Yana," Silva said, looking over her shoulder to make sure no one was riding near them, "delivering this man doesn't guarantee we'll unmask the Gutter King, but it does guarantee our prisoner will suffer."
"There might be another way," Jeremiah added. "Stopping the Gutter Rebellion isn't your burden alone. Perhaps some other sorcerers can provide."
"There are no other sorcerers," Yana said. Her dark eyes betrayed a sense of hurt, or uncertainty, or perhaps a mix of the two.
"Don't you think I tried?
The few friends I have left are either in hiding or don't care. It's only me." Jeremiah looked at Silva. He saw in her expression the same care and understanding he felt for Yana. Silva gave him a brief nod and said to Yana, "We're here too." Yana rubbed her left eye with the heel of her palm. "And that's no coincidence. You asked why I'm wasting my breath with this group, Silva, and I hoped you would understand, because you're like them too. You've all experienced such loss and loneliness." Yana looked up to the sky. She added, with some hesitation, "I just don't want you two to end up like me." Jeremiah allowed silence to pass between them. Then he said,
"I think we can save this man and still make headway with the rebellion."
Yana raised an eyebrow. "How do you plan to do that?"
"I don't know yet. Let me think on it."
Silence again passed like a tepid river. Arthur, evidently bored chatting with everyone else in their party, jogged alongside Ingot. Arthur wasted no time catching the three of them up on his own adventures. He said he, the Virginian hunters, and the monster hunters Beatrix and Nicola set out from Bedson upon Ismena and headed west for some days, before Beatrix and Nicola decided it would be best to part. Arthur and the hunters intended to cross the Pontar near the town of Rhynb in Redania, but Nilfgaardian activity forced them further and further east. Arthur, of course, played his lute as he explained this. Jeremiah, feeling irritable from his poor night's sleep, did not ask for specifics. When his tale was done, Arthur asked Jeremiah how his repeating crossbow business was going.
"Rather well," Jeremiah said. "I've made more money than I know what to do with."
This was technically true, but the craftsman hadn't seen a coin with his own eyes. He made a deal with the church to have his portion of the profits deposited directly into his account at John Cardy Bank. This saved him, and his back, the problem of lugging around thousands of crowns worth of gold. It was much simpler to write a banknote when needed. "Repeating crossbow, eh?" Asilla said. She walked a few paces behind Arthur. She brushed a lock of curly hair behind her ear and adjusted the bow on her shoulder. It looked well-worn, but loved, polished and in good condition.
"Indeed," Jeremiah said, feeling more like himself again. "If you and your friends are interested, I could provide you with a Keller repeating crossbow at a discount."
"That's all right," Asilla said. "I think there's no substitute for the old ways, if you want to know the truth."
"I don't think of it as a substitute. More an improvement."
Asilla scoffed, then shaded her eyes to look at a full and lustrous tree several yards away.
"You see the apples hanging from it?" she asked.
Jeremiah squinted. Pale red bulbs, a little on the small side, sagged from the tree's branches.
"Yes."
"I'm hungry," Asilla said. "Do you mind shooting me down one or two?"
A stabbing pain ran up Jeremiah's side as he reached down to pick up his crossbow. He grimaced. It was as if someone was running his side through with a white-hot poker. Jeremiah took a few deep breaths and straightened his back. He closed one eye and held his breath, but doing so only amplified the pain. Jeremiah grunted and shot. The bolt missed the tree by several inches. He cursed, but tried steadying his breath and aimed his second shot. By then, Asilla, moving with the solid surety of sap trickling down a tree, knocked her bow and fired, spearing an apple and knocking it off its branch. She drew a second arrow and fired. It found its mark in another apple that dropped to the ground. Jeremiah lowered his crossbow, not wishing to amplify his embarrassment further.
"Point taken," he said to the hunter.
Asilla patted Ingot's flank.
It's an impressive invention, and no doubt fine in the hands of mustard peasants, but it's no substitute for experience. Silva laughed, then Yana joined in. Jeremiah felt his face redden. Seeing this, Yana stopped laughing and cleared her throat. Why don't we take a short rest under that tree? I'd like to talk to Ethramel about something. An excellent idea, Arthur said. Maybe Acilla can shoot down a few more apples for us to eat. That night, they camped near a small cluster of apple trees. Yana and Ethramel ventured into the small forest for training, evidently what she had discussed with the sorcerer earlier that day. Zevo made a fire, and the prisoner once again silently sat by it. Jeremiah stalked to the campfire and dropped down next to the prisoner. He scratched his cheek and asked,
"So, what's your name?"
The prisoner did not answer.
"You can tell me that much, can't you? I'm Jeremiah Keller of Edern."
When the man did not answer, he lowered his voice and said,
"Look, we're not with the Gutter Rebellion, but we had to pretend we were to gain their trust. We're trying to end the rebellion. I can help you, but I need you to help me. Why is the rebellion interested in you?"
The man looked at Jeremiah, firelight reflecting in his dark eyes. Jeremiah saw fear in those eyes, but also a certain sadness, or perhaps resignation. The man regarded the craftsman for some time, as if reading his mind to discern the truth. Then he said, "My name's Armin."
"Nice to meet you, Armin. Where do you come from?"
"Maribor, a city in southern Temeria."
"A long way from here. How long have you been with the rebellion?"
"I don't know. I was hit on the back of my head in Maribor, maybe a month ago. I don't know how long I've been in a lander for." Jeremiah saw the Verdinian hunters and Arthur chatting near another small fire. Zeva had wandered off somewhere, and Silva was tending the horses. Jeremiah spoke quietly.
"And what does the Gutter Rebellion want with you?"
"I don't know." Armin's voice cracked, and he looked down at his scuffed leather boots. "No one's telling me anything."
What's your profession?"
"I'm an architect." Jeremiah expected Armin to be a few things. A soldier, a diplomat, a nobleman. He did not expect architect.
"And what have you built?"
"Too many buildings to list," Armin said. "If you've been to any city in the north, chances are you've seen something I've built."
"Anything of note in Redania? Something the rebels might be interested in?"
Armin shook his head. "A few administrative buildings and barracks in Tredegor, Novigrad, and Oxenfurt, perhaps. A library in Roggeven. A handful of shops in Rin, and Blaviken. But I can't imagine they garner much interest."
"I promise, I won't let the rebels cart you away. I'm going to help you."
"How will you do that?" Armin sounded tired.
"I'm starting to get an idea."
Armin scooched closer to the fire and said nothing, leaving Jeremiah with the sound of cutting wind, light chatter, and his own crowded thoughts. 5. Zeva was roused from his reverie that night to the sound of the prisoner struggling. The man, Zeva now knew, was named Armin. The Witcher had traveled with Jeremiah long enough to parse out when the craftsman was telling the truth, or simply masquerading as truthful. Hearing Jeremiah say he wanted to free Armin, Zevo thought he sounded plain truthful. So he let the matter of transporting a prisoner, as much as the thought soured his stomach like bile, lie for the time being. Zevo had a feeling, however, that the man might try another escape, so he tied a rope between them before they settled in for the night. Armin eventually did fall asleep, and Zevo meditated by the fire, cycling in and out of his brief moments of reverie. He felt the slightest pull on the rope wrapped around his waist. Zevo opened his eye to see Armin fiddling with the rope wrapped around him. He barely made a sound, and the rope barely tugged, but it was enough for Zevo. He watched the man for a moment, broad forehead slick with sweat, tongue sticking out of his mouth as he focused the whole of his concentration on the rope in his lap. Zevo held up his right hand and bent his ring and pinky finger. He summoned his power for the sign of Axie. "Stop," he whispered. Armin felt the sign's effects immediately. His hands went slack and rested in his lap. He looked up blankly at the Witcher and blinked slowly. He would answer any questions the Witcher asked. The sign compelled him to. Zevo never much liked using Axie. He felt it was akin to breaking into someone's mind, but sometimes it had to be done. He didn't fancy chasing Armin into the dark again.
his leg hurt enough as it was. "Why do you keep trying to escape?" Zevo asked. "Because I don't know why I'm here," Armin said softly. "I don't know what they want with me." Tears sprung from his lackluster eyes, and he spoke with a croak. "I'm scared. I just want to go home." The Witcher nodded. "Go back to sleep," he said. Armin went back to sleep. The Witcher rubbed his eye and returned to meditating. 6. "And what is it that you do?" Silva looked at Arthur of Garamore. She had chosen to walk today instead of ride on Yana's horse, because she wanted some space to think. The troubadour grinned, his cornflower blue eyes twinkling. Silva imagined some people found that charming, but she was not such a person. In truth, she found Arthur annoying and presumptuous. "What do you mean?" she asked, as tonelessly as possible. Arthur scratched his forehead. He pointed to Ethramel and said, "Well, that one's a sorcerer." He pointed to Jeremiah. "That one's a craftsman." He ended on Zevo. "And that one, I've been told, is a troubadour who bangs his swords together to make music. But she's gone on to greener pastures, it seems. A doctor, too. But he's also gone away." Jeremiah, Ethramel, Zevo, and Yana rode in a tight cluster, speaking softly. Silva didn't mind. She knew Yana would fill her in with the specifics of their conversation later. Her teacher, for all her powers and experience, was a hopeless gossip, and loved to share anything and everything with Silva. Not that Silva was above such things. She tried her best to share juicy tidbits of information she could gather, too. "I believe I'm missing the point," Silva said to Arthur. "Then I shall get to it. From my experience, you only travel with these three because you have a desirable skill set. So, I was wondering what it is you do." "I'm a witch," Silva thought to say, if just to see the reaction on Arthur's face. But years of caution held her back. So she said, "I'm not with those three. I'm Yana's friend." "Ah, Yana," Arthur said. "A name worthy of a muse. And what is it she does, if I may ask?" Silva watched Ethramel shake his head vigorously and gesture to Yana. Zevo's rising shoulders indicated a grunt, and he said something terse. Armin glanced down at the Witcher from Diabol. Arthur noted Silva's silence and said, "As a gentleman of the road, I've found that." "Excuse me." Silva jogged up to Yana's side, her mirror rhythmically tapping against her thigh. The sorceress helped her onto Ash without a second thought. "Of course I can do it," Yana said. "It would be a simple matter to create a portal back to Maribor."
"Then why not do it with Armin?" Jeremiah said. "After we've handed him off, of course. We'll ride with the rebels, gain their trust, and sneak into wherever they're storing him in the middle of the night."
"There's sense to it," Ethramel said. "It'll be easy to stage an escape. We'll be blameless and remain on the rebellion's good side." Yana looked over to Silva. "What do you think?" Silva, in turn, looked at Armin. His expression was flat, as if the four were discussing saving a distant relative in Nilfgaard instead of himself. Silva pitied the man. She knew what it was like to be battered around by forces beyond your control. "I think," she said, "everyone deserves to live free of fear." Yana smiled and adjusted her knitted skullcap. "Very well, but only after we've met the rebels across the Pontar River. Do you think your patience can last that long?"
"Of course," Jeremiah said. "Thank you, Yana. It's the right thing to do."
"The right thing to do is crush this rebellion," Yana said. She winked when she saw Jeremiah's frown. "But this is a fine way to start." 7. "Try again," Yana said, tossing an unripe red apple to Ethramel. The elf fumbled to catch it, then dropped it at his feet. He knew from dozens of failures already that he would need both his hands for the spell. In theory, creating a portal for multiple people instead of just himself should be child's play. Simply pump more power into the portal spell he already knew to give it more structure and staying power. But, as Yana had showed Ethramel over the last 2 evenings, it was anything but simple. Yana had spent half their day yesterday just explaining the theory behind the teleportation spell. Ethramel was formally trained in the ways of magic in Dol Blathana by the famous elven sorcerer Francesca Findebear. But in truth, he was never much for studying and theory. So Ethramel thought it best to learn through practice, but that proved slow going. Ethramel's legs shaked as he tried to steady his balance, and once again drew on his own diminished power. He recited the incantation just as Yana did, and made the proper signs with his hands. Ethermel was pleased to see a light green portal open in front of him, the size of two doors placed next to each other instead of just one. "Good," Yana said. "Now picture where you want the second portal to open up." Ethermel closed his eyes and pictured the vast, empty plains just ahead of them. He was similarly pleased to see a second portal, the same size as the first, open. He laughed and said, "Not bad for my 14th try, eh?" "Not bad for your 17th try," Yana corrected. "But forgive my lack of confidence if I don't walk through it just yet. Try the apple." Ethermel squatted to grab the apple at his feet, afraid his legs would give out. By the gods, he felt empty, like a water skin filled with air. Still, his trembling fingers grabbed the apple, and he stood back up. He looked to Yana one last time before tossing the apple underhand through the portal in front of him. They both held their breath, waiting to see the apple fall through the second portal. 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds. Nothing.
"Son of a plowing bitch!"
Ethermel snarled. He kicked the dirt in front of him, but lost his balance and fell on his ass. Pain crawled up his sprained leg, through his shivering and aching body. The portal in front of him shimmered for an instant, then disappeared. The second followed suit. Ethermel threw his head back and uttered a guttural scream.
"Fucking goddamned son of a fuck! What in the fucking fuck is so fucking difficult about this?"
Yana adjusted her skullcap, peering into the distance. "Looks like another apple lost to the void forever. Your connection between the two portals is still unstable."
"Yes, I understand that, Rectorus," Ethermel snapped. "I once again have shown I'm not worthy to be your apprentice."
Yana frowned. "It sounds like you've got something you want to get off your chest." Ethermel did, in fact. It was something that had been festering in him since he first met Silva in Alander. Jealousy. "You trained me back in Mahakam for a brief period. Taught me the original teleportation spell."
"I did," Yana said.
"And I must have seemed a promising student then, right? I took to the solo teleportation spell with ease."
"You did."
Ethermel struggled to keep tears of frustration welling up in his eyes. "So why didn't you ask me to become your apprentice back then, instead of choosing Silva? What does she have that I don't?"
"Outside of you being a stubborn son of a bitch who seldom listens to his elders," Yana said.
That cut the sorcerer deeper than she intended, and tears did spring up in his eyes. Yana shook her head and said, "I'm sorry, that was poorly said. The truth is that Silva needed me more than you did. I knew you'd be all right on your own."
"But I don't always want to be on my own," Ethermel thought to say, but the embarrassment of admitting that would be too much.
So Ethermel shook his head and said, "I'm sorry. I don't mean to take it out on you or Silva. I'm just frustrated. I've always been naturally talented at magic, so whenever I hit a blockade, well, it's hard."
He wiped his dirty fingers on his pants and rested his hands on his knees.
"It's the easiest thing in the world to transport myself across the continent, but ask me to help anyone else do it, and I freeze up like a soldier at his first battle. I have no talent for helping anyone but myself, it seems."
The sorceress sat in the dirt next to him. She patted Ethermel's shoulder and said, "It's not like I was born knowing all these spells. I had talent, sure, but I also worked hard at it. So with a little more practice, you may be able to help someone else, if you so choose."
Yana stood up and dusted the dirt off the back of her pants.
"Come on, the sun's setting. Let's head back to camp."
Yana held her hand out to help him up. Ethermel looked at it for a moment before taking it. 8. The Pontar was a mighty river that cut across the north from east to west, dividing the northern kingdom of Redania from the southern kingdom of Temeria, as well as the northern kingdom of Kedwin from the southern kingdom of Edirne. And surrounding the river was a swath of greenery called the Pontar Valley, a lush and fertile land that provided much of the continent's food supply. Jeremiah saw this region's fecundity slowly take shape as they rode. The green plains they traveled since Alander were dotted with farms growing wheat and apples and barley and cabbage in equal measure. The trees, scarce at first, became more plentiful and formed small pocketed forests teeming with apples. They rode on the border of the region the Gutter Rebellion wanted control of, and for good reason. A kingdom carved out of the Pontar Valley would have enough natural resources to rival any of the other northern kingdoms. Sevu of Kavir trotted ahead of the others, his one eye squinting at the ramshackle ferryman's cottage that was little more than a dot in the distance. The sun, blazing directly overhead, made it difficult to see. He handed Diabol's reins to Jeremiah and said flatly, "I'll go scout ahead, see if there's an ambush waiting for us."
"Good luck."
Jeremiah looked at Armin of Maribor in the saddle. The architect was busy studying the dirt. Pain shot through Jeremiah's side as they waited for Zevo to return. Yana watched him suck in air sharply as he nearly doubled over. The sorceress leaned forward to keep Jeremiah from falling off his horse, and planted her hands on his shoulder to steady him. "The curse bothering you?" she asked softly. Jeremiah could only nod. "It's getting worse. You should ask Zevo if..."
"It's nothing," Jeremiah said. "We have bigger things to worry about right now."
Yana nodded and smoothed out the cloak that bunched on Jeremiah's shoulders. "You're right. We'll discuss it later." The Witcher returned in half an hour. "It's clear. Nothing but plains you couldn't hide an ambush party in. The shack's abandoned, and there's a small raft attached to the dock on the river."
"Any sign of our rebellious friends?" Ethramel asked.
"I saw two of them lounging at the shack on the other side of the Pontar," Zevo said, "looking mighty bored."
"They've been expecting us for some time," Yana said. "Best not keep them waiting any longer."
"Aye," Zevo said. "No sense in delaying."
Arthur sat up and strummed idly at his lute.
"I've a feeling this will be worthy of a ballad."
"Just be sure not to get in the way," Ethramel said.
They rode towards the river, and though Jeremiah had seen it before, he was impressed by its sheer size. Blue water flowed towards the western ocean, creating a wide rush of swirling rapids. The ferryman's shack on the other side looked the size of a cart, but he saw two people stand up and walk into the hovel. Three more individuals, hooded, though it was difficult to tell at that distance, walked out, five in total. One of them stepped onto the bank. Jeremiah heard the man's voice clear as day, as if he was speaking in front of them instead of across a wide river. Jeremiah had spent enough time around Yana at this point to know the man was using some sort of spell. "You've come with the delivery?" he asked.
"Aye," Yana said at the same casual volume. She, no doubt, used the same spell to reply. She motioned to Armin, who Zevo gently lifted off Diabol.
Jeremiah dismounted and said to the architect,
"Don't worry, our plan will work, but you have to cross the river with us and travel along for a while. Do you trust me?"
Armin looked Jeremiah square in the eyes and said,
"No."
Jeremiah patted Armin on the shoulder.
"You'll be all right."
"Would you be so kind as to ferry him across for us?" the hooded rebel said. "We left you a boat." Zevo wasn't lying when he said it was a small raft. The boat looked weather-worn and cracked, in danger of sinking at the slightest resistance, and couldn't fit more than three people. But it had a rudder and two oars, and bobbed placidly above the water. "I'm a fair hand at fording rivers," Arthur said. "I can ferry us all across."
"Armin and I will go first," Yana said. "I'll teleport us out of there if it's a trap."
"Be careful," Jeremiah said.
"I'll be okay," Yana said.
Armin, Yana, and Arthur stepped onto the boat. Arthur undid the tether and handed it to Devery.
"Keep an eye out, would you?" he said to the hunter.
Arthur produced the oars and started rowing, humming a ballad as he did. Armin stared at Jeremiah the whole time. The craftsman tried not to let it bother him. Arthur maneuvered around the currents masterfully. Jeremiah watched the boat's prow dig into the muddy bank on the other side of the river. Armin stepped out of the boat first, followed by Yana. Arthur sat up and followed, hand rummaging in his cloak. Arthur pulled out a small wooden mace and, without flourish or fanfare, swung it at the back of Yana's head. The blow connected, but no sound was heard over the rapids. Yana took a steady step forward, her boot sinking into the mud as if striking a fighter's stance. Her skullcap slipped off the back of her head, and a tumble of curly hair fell forward, obscuring her face. Her hips started to pivot, turning towards Arthur, before her left leg buckled and she collapsed in the mud. Armin saw this and made a break for it, running parallel to the bank.
Arthur said something to the rebels, and two of them grabbed Armin's arms and dragged him, screaming, to the ferryman's shack. The troubadour motioned to two other rebels, who knelt and dragged Yana away. Jeremiah felt his heart go numb. Cold spread through his fingers and toes, but his face felt flush. He roared and drew his crossbow, steadying the stock against his shoulder. He knew the bolt likely couldn't cross the river, but he didn't care. He had to do something. Anything. The bolt's whining whistle cut through the water's roar as it barreled towards Arthur. Before it could clear the river, the final hooded rebel, the one with the magical voice, stepped in front of Arthur and held out his arm. A gust of wind blasted the bolt away, just as it was splitting into three, and it fell into the rapids. The sorcerer's hood snapped back by the wind, revealing an aged man with a patch of gray beard ringed around his mouth. The witcher's mouth dropped open at the sight of the sorcerer across the pontar. "Stesco Dror," Zevo muttered. "Son of a bitch." Jeremiah ignored him and aimed another shot at Arthur. "Thank you for your help, my friends," Arthur said with a self-assured grin. The sorcerer had also amplified his voice. "My next ballad will be about how the Gutter King himself tricked a group of wanderers into delivering two of his most important assets." Jeremiah shot again, blinking back the tears forming in his eyes. The bolt fell short and landed safely in the muddy riverbank. From the corner of his eye, Jeremiah saw Devry, Acilla, and Avon back away from the group, knocking their bows. "Liberty through union," the three hunters said in near unison. The rebel sorcerer, evidently Stesco Dror, waved his hands together. A red portal ripped open behind the craftsman and his companions, and out stepped five more hooded rebels. A strip of tanned leather was pinned on each of their breasts, bearing a red, three-pronged crown, diagonally cleaved in two by a yellow line, and knives were gripped in their gloved hands.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from The Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.